Thank you, Byron, for leading us in those songs. Appreciate you doing that. I did notice on the table in the back, we do have the latest copy of The Voice of Truth International. So be sure and pick up one of those copies. Got several on the table in the back. Byron, appreciate your work with that as well. Thank you all again for being here this morning. Got a good crowd. Got a few more over here. I'll have to look this direction this morning. So, I never mean to overlook anyone, but I've been told to overlook the center section sometimes. So I work on that too. And anytime I'm here, I'm looking right here. And I hope that that we each approach our life in that way. You know, we look right here first. What does God's Word tell me? What do I have to gain from God's Word? How can I share that then with others? We're going to look at a story this morning in Exodus. Kind of touching basically chapter 5, maybe get just a little bit into chapter 6, but start this morning by asking a question. Have you ever had just a truly bad day? You ever had that day that went from bad to worse and just kept on going? Got a little prop this morning. Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. You may have read this to your kids or grandkids. Thought we had a copy of it in our library, but didn't find it. So actually, I checked this out from the Springfield Library. They had one copy on the north side of town, so I had them hold it for me. Little boy named Alexander, he says, I went to sleep with gum in my mouth, and now there's gum in my hair. When I got out of bed this morning, I tripped on the skateboard, and by mistake, I dropped my sweater in the sink while the water was running. And I could tell it was going to be a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. At breakfast, Anthony found a Corvette Stingray car kit in his breakfast cereal box. And Nick found a junior undercover agent code ring in his breakfast cereal box. But in my breakfast cereal box, all I found was breakfast cereal. I think I'll move to Australia. He goes on in this story and he's carpooling to school. The kids won't let him sit where he wants to. He gets stuck in the middle. The two brothers get the outside seat. And then at school, the teacher doesn't like his picture quite as well as he does one of his little friend's pictures. During their singing class, the teacher told him he was singing too loud. When he counted, he forgot a number. The teacher pointed that out. He just goes on and on throughout the day. It was a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. At the dentist that afternoon, the two brothers, their teeth were fine. He had the cavity. The doctor said, you'll have to come back. On the way downstairs, he tripped and fell, and they got him for that. Just keeps on and keeps on. Went to the shoe store, wanted to buy him sneakers that he had picked out, but they didn't have those in stock. Got home that night, he said, there was lima beans for dinner, and I hate lima beans. There was kissing on TV, and I hate kissing. My bath was too hot, I got soap in my eyes, my marble went down the drain, and I had to wear my railroad train pajamas. I hate my railroad train pajamas. When I went to bed, Nick took my pillow, he said that I could keep, and the Mickey Mouse nightlight burned out, and I bit my tongue. The cat wants to sleep with Anthony, not with me. It's been a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. My mom says some days are like that, even in Australia. So, go through this and just not having a good day at all. And we've probably experienced those days. Had those days when you think, what have I done? Where is this day going? Just how much worse could this day get? You know, Moses might have been asking some of those questions throughout his life. And if you've had one of these days, you'll be able to identify with Moses. You know, here in the last part of chapter 4, and I asked this morning if they would read beginning at verse 27, because we've got a setup here. And if you begin at verse 27 and read on down through the first verse of chapter 5, things seem to be going fairly well. In fact, Moses had accepted the call of God. He had secured the release of his father-in-law and began his journey back to Egypt. And on the way, he met up with Aaron, whom God had sent out to meet him, there in verse 27. When Aaron arrived, they summoned a meeting of the Israelite elders, and they all revealed the words that God had given them and showed them the signs of God's power. That's recorded there in verses 28 through 30. And then there in verse 31, it says the people believed. Things seem to be going okay, don't they? Things seem to be going pretty good. Things are kind of coming into place. Aaron now is alongside Moses, and they've gone to the people, and they've got them all excited. Now they're going to take that next step. And it's sometimes that next step that causes that bad day. The easy part was over. Now was the time to relay to Pharaoh the message of God. Certain things we need to keep in mind when we think about bad days. Lots of things you could think about. It's only a day. Tomorrow will be a different day. But I think number one, when you have a bad day, recognize that the presence of problems is not always an indication that we're not in God's will. We just sometimes think, God's left us all alone. Here I am fighting on my own. Here I am having this terrible day. And where's God? We need to realize that's not always the case. What about the scene here? This scene is a dramatic one. We have two 80-year-old men standing before the most powerful man on earth in that known time. And chapter 5 begins, and let me read that. Afterward, Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, "Thus says the Lord, God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness." All of this excitement, everything's building. He comes in and stands before Pharaoh and says, "Let my people go." God had told him it wouldn't be that easy. We can go back and look at that in chapter 3, verses 18 and 19, I believe, and see that. But all of this kind of leading up, and then what happens? Notice in verse 2, Pharaoh's response. And Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey His voice and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, nor will I let Israel go." The day sort of had a downturn, didn't it? Sort of took one of those that just kind of downhill. And things even got worse from there. Pharaoh's response here is completely negative. Pharaoh's response is characterized by his arrogance. And he asked the question, "Who is Jehovah that I should obey His voice and let Israel go? I do not know Jehovah." It's not that Pharaoh had never heard the name of Jehovah. He undoubtedly has. It's that he refuses to recognize in the word obey being such an important part of his response. "I'm not going to obey what Jehovah says." Pharaoh had that choice, didn't he? Pharaoh could say no. And of course, Pharaoh did. A book written by F.B. Meyer on the life of Moses. He says in that, "To appreciate the audacity of the man, we must remember the unbridled power and authority claimed by the Egyptian monarchs. For him, great Egypt existed. For him, all other men lived, suffered, and died. For him, the mighty Nile flowed. For him, vast armies of priests and magicians and courtiers wrought and ministered." "No, I'm not going to let the people go, Moses. What are you talking about?" And at once the situation worsened for the children of Israel. Notice it says there in verse 6, So the same day Pharaoh commanded the taskmasters of the people and their officers, saying, "You shall no longer give the people straw to make brick as before. Let them go out and gather straw for themselves, and you shall lay on them the quota of bricks for they made which they made before. You shall not reduce it, for they are idle. Therefore they cry out, saying, 'Let us go and sacrifice to our God. Let us let more work be laid on the men, that they may labor in it, and let them not regard false words.'" You know, as desperate as their plight may have been, it's about to get worse. As terrible as the situation may have been, living in that bondage, being forced to work in a foreign country, something that I can't relate to personally. I've only read about. And I would imagine many in the audience here this morning would have that same outlook. But Pharaoh's response was to make slavery more bitter, the bondage heavier, the tasks more difficult. You know, I think this is a wonderful illustration of what happens in the lives of some people with whom we share the life-changing message of Jesus. Have you ever thought about that? Rather than accept the message, they become even busier. More burdened, more bitter. The apparent hardening of attitudes tells us something. Satan's worried. He wants to keep his hold. on this one that you shared this message with. Sometimes things have to get a whole lot worse before people are ready to hear the truth. And this is the way it was with Pharaoh. I'm not going to let him go. Don't even think about that, Moses. In fact, I'm going to do the very opposite. I'm going to make it tough. These bricks, I've supplied materials, but now they're going to have to go out and fend for themselves. Look what you've done, Moses. You've messed up. Finally, they could stand it no longer and decided to make a direct appeal to Pharaoh. And then in verse 15, it says, "Then the officers of the children of Israel came and cried out to Pharaoh." The result here was just as you might have expected. Pharaoh refused to listen to the appeal made to him there in verses 17 through 19. And then down in verse 20, notice what it says. "Then as they came out from Pharaoh, they met Moses and Aaron, who stood there to meet them. And they said to them, 'Let the Lord look on you and judge, because you have made us abhorrent in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants, to put a sword in their hand to kill us.'" As they came out of this meeting, Moses and Aaron were there to meet them. And notice what they say. It says, "Moses, look what you've done." They had accused Moses of making them a stench, a foul odor to the Egyptians. He said, "Look where you're at now. Look where we're at now. We had it bad. Now it's worse." Moses having a bad day. I think also we need to realize, when you have a bad day, we must recognize that God does not have to work according to our plans or our timetable. So many times that day is just all we can see. That day is the whole world, nothing more. We don't see both sides. God does. God's plan involves more than just that day. The mistake of the foreman, and perhaps the children of Israel as a whole, is that they presumed God would work on their timetable. He didn't work the way they anticipated, and they were offended, basically. Shouldn't have been surprised by this. God had told Moses this to begin with. Also, we need to recognize that when we have a bad day, we need to recognize that when problems abound, we've got to be careful which way we run. Consider for just a moment how the response of the people must have affected Moses. Don't you think that might have brought back all the memories of rejection? The memories where he had been accused, and the memories that he had when he ran and hid? What do you think Moses might have wanted to do at this very point? Run and hide again? What happened? Moses poured out all his anxiety to the only one who could answer his questions. There in verse 22, it says, "So Moses returned to the Lord and said, 'Lord, you have brought trouble on this people.'" Or excuse me, "Lord, why have you brought trouble on this people? Why is it you have sent me?" Moses is saying, "Where did I go wrong? How did I mess up? How did this day become so bad? What happened?" You know, when things are not going the way we think that they should, we begin asking some questions, don't we? We begin asking how. Why? Why me, Lord? Why me? Why right now? Why did I ever get my hope built up? Why did I ever accept this job? If God's on my side, why has this happened to me? How am I going to get through this day in my life? Are these some questions maybe you've even asked from time to time? In verse 1 of chapter 6, we find this. It says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh. For with a strong hand he will let them go, and with a strong hand he will drive them out of his land.' And God spoke to Moses and said to him, 'I am the Lord.'" I am the Lord, Moses. Moses this time ran the right direction, didn't he? He went to God and he asked these questions. He said, "Why have you sent me, Moses? You're the one that I chose. Moses, you're the one that can get the job done." We need to realize that when we have a bad day, we must recognize that God's plans and purposes have not changed.
Moses still had a job to do. That job hadn't changed. A little hiccup here in the process. A little hill, if you will, to get over. But the plan hadn't changed. The plan was to release God's chosen people. That was still the ultimate goal. No matter how beat down we are, how crushed or how broken and desperate we become, God still cares. He has great compassion for us. And I think we need to remember that we are more important to God than what we have done or accomplished. Think about that for just a moment. You're more important to God than what you've done or what you've accomplished. Yes, He wants great things from all of us. Yet there are times when we're down. Times when we have a bad day. You're still important to God. The New Testament reader is also reminded of this in Hebrews chapter 12. It says, "Let us run with endurance the race set before us, looking unto Jesus, who is the author and finisher of our faith." You know, until we fix our eyes upon Jesus, we'll not be able to handle those days that go from bad to worse. Charles Swindoll, in a book, wrote this paragraph. "When your schedule presses, when your prospect thins, when your hope burns low, when people disappoint you, when events turn against you, when dreams die, when the walls close in, when the prognosis seems grim, when your heart breaks, look at the Lord and keep on looking at Him." Where are your eyes this morning? Where are they fixed this morning? They're fixed on this day which may have the problems, this day which may contain heartaches, worries, concerns. Are we fixed on God? Moses had been discouraged. He was frustrated. He felt helpless, but he kept coming back, and the Lord met him every time. We need to realize that deliverance comes after trouble. Before we can be delivered, there has to be some trouble, doesn't there? We want deliverance, but we don't always want the trouble. We don't always want to go through the things that get us to the place where Moses finally got delivering those people. And we'll read throughout the book of Exodus more times that Moses had a bad day. But we must be faithful during the trouble. How is faithfulness expressed in times that you have trouble? Exodus chapter 14 and verse 13 says, "Moses answered the people, 'Do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again.'" God's plan was finalized. God's plan was accomplished. It'll be accomplished in your life as well. You'll have a bad day or two along the way. Maybe several. Just yesterday, I was asked to lead singing at a funeral service in Arkansas. A good friend of Carrie's family, known for years, name's Russell Wheeler, and I knew him fairly well. I've known him for about 22 years. Didn't know all the stories of his life, and I heard a story at the service yesterday that really touched me, because sometimes I say, "What can I do?" Sometimes I say, "What difference can I make?" Russell was the manager of the Kroger store there in Paragould, Arkansas. And during his time with the store, they had built a new store, a bigger facility, a better facility. And they asked him to go to Memphis for training for that newer, bigger, better facility. And while he was at Memphis, they said, "Russell, we've got one thing that you'll need to start doing in this store." And Russell said, "What's that?" And they said, "Well, you'll have to open up a liquor department. You've got all this room now. You can now serve alcohol." Probably a pretty bad day for Russell. Russell's response, though, was, "As long as I'm the manager of that store, there will not be a drop of alcohol sold. If it means taking my job, take it. But that's my stand." Well, in the obituary, it said that Russell managed the Kroger store for 38 years. They called him back and said, "Okay, we want you to do that." He took a stand. Had a bad day. He'd gone home that weekend and told his wife, said, "I probably don't have a job. Probably don't have a place to go to work Monday morning. Because I think I know what they're going to do." Well, he got a call that morning and was told to come open up his new store without the liquor department. You know, I think sometimes we just think, "I can't make a difference. I can't really do anything that's going to matter. So we don't take that stand. We have to go through trouble to be delivered. Certain life lessons that we can learn from this story. Difficulties force us into dependence, number one. Number two, difficulties force us into patience. And number three, difficulties mature us. James chapter 1, verse 2 through 5 says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him." I want to leave you this morning with 10 rules for life. 10 very simple statements. Number one, people are unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Love them anyway. Number two, if you do good, people will accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Do good anyway. Number three, if you're successful, you'll gain false friends and true enemies. Succeed anyway. Number four, the good you do today will be forgotten tomorrow. Do good anyway. Number five, honesty and frankness make you vulnerable. Be honest and frank anyway. Number six, the biggest people with the biggest ideas can be shot down by the smallest people with the smallest minds. Think big anyway. Number seven, people favor the underdog but follow only the top dogs. Fight for the underdog anyway. Number eight, what you spend years building may be destroyed overnight. Build anyway. Number nine, people really need help but may attack you if you help them. Help people anyway. And number 10, give the world the best you've got and you'll get kicked in the teeth. Give the world the best you've got anyway. What are you doing this morning? In your bad days, how are you coping? In your bad days, where are you running? Where are you turning? Are you running away? Or are you turning like Moses did and coming to God? God didn't condemn Moses for questioning, did He? There are some questions. We have questions. But where do we go to seek those answers? I don't know your exact day this morning. You may be having a good day. You may be like the last part of chapter 4 up to the very first part of chapter 5. Things seem to be going good. We know bad days will come. We know bad days will be a part of our life. But where are you this morning? If you're having a bad day, and I mean that in a way that if you're going through a period that's not right, or going through a period that you need help, we want to pray for you this morning. One of our shepherds will come forward and pray for you this morning, asking God to help you through your bad times, your tough times. Or maybe you're here this morning and haven't yet put on a Christ through baptism. Would like to take that step, the first step in your faithful life of service to God. They have some bad days. Moses had some bad days. God's plan prevailed. We need to realize and remember that in our lives. If you're subject to that invitation, won't you come as we stand and sing?